Welcome to the Breakthrough Success Podcast, helping you achieve that breakthrough you've always been looking for in your business. And now your host, Mark Gubertzi.
Hello and welcome. I am your host, Mark Gubertzi, and this is the podcast for marketers and small business owners who are looking for the breakthrough for their businesses. I'm very excited about the show. We are going to discuss how to spot the next wave of consumer demand with our guest, Mike Michalowicz. Mike has created three multi-million dollar businesses and is an author of four best-selling books. It is my pleasure to welcome Mike to the show.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me on, man.
My pleasure, Mike. I've been following your work for many years. In fact, I'm not sure if you noticed, but the first ever business conference or event I was at, you were one of the speakers for those events. So I started following you very early on in my journey.
Yeah, and as a result, I started following you. It's amazing what you and your brother, what you guys have done. Just it's awesome to see you sticking with your passion.
Thank you. I greatly appreciate that. The question I like to start off with for all of my guests is I'd like to get an idea of what got them started. What was the big why that motivated them? So what got you started in business?
You know, for me, I think it's very atypical. It was the I'm not going to do this anymore moment. And now what I'm about to say, I do not encourage anyone to do what I did to get started. I was actually at a bar, was having some drinks. And as I was drinking more and more, I was like, I can't work for this guy anymore. So I don't know if alcohol is a great way to start a business. And but it was how I got started. And it wasn't even actually a passion of mine. I didn't anticipate I would love entrepreneurship and never even considered it. But I committed to it that night and by the next morning had opened my little LLC and pushed real hard to make it successful. In the process, I fell in love with entrepreneurship. So I didn't have a big why. I had a big shot of booze.
So spur of the moment type of action. So yeah. When your mind was a little more clear and you're actually able to look at this journey and think more short term and long term, what were you thinking about that path in front of you when you've just done the LLC and you're getting started?
So the first moment was, oh my God, what have I done? Right? So there's panic. I actually tried to get my job back and the guy, I left this kind of rambling, drunken message saying how I'm going to go into the business on my own, and he sucked. So I couldn't get a job back and couldn't find a job. Not that I even started looking. I was desperate. I needed to make money. So I immediately started to work. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to do it. I started knocking on doors, literally trying to sell my services. I was going into computer technology. I didn't know how to work on computers, but I had to figure it out. But what I did find, Mark, is there's a fascinating element that I think is an important part of success, but many people don't think about it, and it's fear. I was so afraid of failure. I was so afraid of not making money to support myself, and I had started a young family with my wife. The three of us, I had to make it work. And while fear is not a sustainable mechanism for success, what it did do is I was able to get up at 4 or 5 in the morning, push hard until midnight, and do the same thing for a couple of years. At a certain point, fear becomes stress, and I realized that early enough, and I think it can be damaging. But I was able to get a lot accomplished just because fear was such a motivator. At a certain point, it was during that process, I was saying I fell back in love, or not back in love, I fell in love with entrepreneurship and saw that it could fulfill more than just a source of income, that you could really live out a lifestyle as you defined it for yourself.
I'm very interested in the fact that you use fear as a motivator. I remember first hearing about that in your book, The Pumpkin Plan. So that's, I mean, a lot of people just like to view fear as some type of limit, but you could use it to push yourself so that the fear is no longer a part of your life.
Right. You know, there's those signs. I remember there was a signs, maybe this was in the 90s or something, like no fear, all this stuff of fear. And I understand the intent to overcome obstacles, but fear, I think, can be embraced. I think it's normal and natural. And I think we have to appreciate as opposed to ignore it to push ourselves forward. But as I was saying a few minutes earlier, there is a certain point where if you are driven exclusively by fear, it will overwhelm you. It will prevent you from moving forward. It will paralyze you. So you have to find something greater than that day-to-day panic to move along. And for me, it was first finding it as something I enjoyed and loved, and then ultimately finding purpose in it, a greater impact. Like, what am I doing to change the world, to change myself, to serve others, serve myself? And once I started getting clarity on that, then fear pretty much vanished. It still appears in moments when I'm uncomfortable or something unexpected presents itself. But that purpose kind of pulls me forward and has me very motivated to do really big things.
I like how you acted on your fear, and just a quick mention before us to using that fear to elevate you. Now, when you first got in, it was a rather fearless decision at the time to become an entrepreneur, and then the fear came in and you were thinking about getting your job back. If you got your job back, do you think you would be an entrepreneur?
No. It's funny. I think many of us have dreams that we never even rest enough, if you will, to see them. I mean, I think all of us have desires and visions and things that we want to do, but we never even spend the time questioning ourselves about it and letting it present itself. So for me, I had literally no plans to be an entrepreneur. I mean, not an iota, but that one night it triggered and I took decisive action that I could not unwind. And, you know, the booze didn't help. It didn't hurt. Yeah, I think if I was just thinking about it, I don't think I've been as decisive and made an action that was unwindable. I think for the folks listening in, as we think about our own entrepreneurial endeavors, whatever they may be, that we have to allow ourselves to spend time thinking about it, fantasizing about it, being curious about it. And then there's a certain moment where that's no longer fulfilling. You either got to go all in or got to say, I'm never going to do it and give up the ghost. I'm a believer in then's the time to go all in. Because if you dream and fantasize about something and never give it a shot, you will die with regret. If you give a shot and it fails, at least you will have known. And if you give it a shot and it plays out a new chapter in your life and it's successful, well, that's what you were intended to do. So once you feel it, once you've had enough kind of fantasizing about it, it's time to go all in.
So the interesting thing about your journey is that you've had a roller coaster journey filled with a lot of successes and mistakes. So your first company that you started, you ended up selling for millions of dollars, but then you got involved in angel investing and that didn't go as well for you. So When a lot of people, they look at the success, they think that's so hard to achieve, but even worse, when you've achieved the success and then you're back down to square one, it's very difficult to rise back up again and return to the same level of success or an even higher level of success. So how did you rise up after your time as an angel investor?
Yeah, so the story behind the angel investor component is I stepped into something that I wasn't passionate about and wasn't skilled at. I saw a money opportunity, and this is a lesson I've been teaching but needed to relearn for myself. I believe that if you and I, Mark, went into a similar industry, the same industry, maybe we were direct competitors, but you stepped into something that you love or truly passionate about, I stepped in with no passion, but I had money backing me, you would still win. Because the money can, and does, disappear very quickly. It's the passion that will persist throughout. And when the business faces its biggest challenges, when you believe in what you're doing is having a greater impact, you'll be magnetized or pulled forward through that dark period. So for me, when I became an angel investor, it's like, oh, there's a money opportunity. And I was walking in with money. I'd sold, actually, it was my second company I'd sold. I'd sold the first one to private equity, my second one to Fortune 500. And quite frankly, I was full of myself. I'm like, I know everything about business. I know everything about entrepreneurship. I'm the greatest. And therefore, I'm just going to invest in other people and have their businesses grow because, you know, I know I have all the smarts. If they just listen to me, they'll be successful and I'll be god-awful rich. And that's when I got my lesson that never do something you're not passionate about. Never do something just for the money. And it took me about 2 years. I lost everything. But here was the interesting thing. When I hit rock bottom, I realized that the only way out was to pick something new, and that played into my passion. I also realized that when you hit rock bottom, that's when I was going through it, is a lot of people say you bounce right back up. Like the only way to go from the bottom is up, right? Maybe there's some truth to that, but you do get dragged along the ground for quite a period. It was a very difficult part in my life, but I did explore purpose. And instead of starting a business saying, oh, here's a way to make money, here's what the world needs, I asked, what do I need? What's my purpose? And then how do I play fully into that so that the world who wants that thing can benefit, because I'm so believing what I'm doing. That's when I decided to become an author. That's when I went all in on it. And it was a rocky, hard, long start. It's paying itself off now in great ways, and it's only growing. But throughout, it paid from day one, paid for itself because of the passion. I so believed in it. You probably heard people say this too. I would do it if I didn't make a penny. I believe in what I do so much.
And you mentioned that it was difficult in the beginning, and I think that's something that a lot of people overlook. Like right now, if this is the first time you're hearing of Mike McCallick, you're thinking, wow, this guy's found 3 multi-million dollar companies. He's written 4 best-selling books, but you don't see the hard work that he's putting in to achieve all of those results. And that goes for any successful person.
Yeah, that's the danger, right? And I'm nothing in regards to the exposure that Elon Musk has or Mark Zuckerberg or any of these folks. When we see these stories, I consider them the lottery winners. If we look at Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, and Richard Branson, all these other entrepreneurs that we herald for their success, these people that have a business concept on Friday and sell the company on Monday for millions, if not billions of dollars, it seems like that's the path of entrepreneurship. And from my experience and from the countless entrepreneurs I've studied, talked with, met, I'm actually even heading out today to speak to another 1,000 entrepreneurs tonight in Chicago.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. What I found is that all these people, none of them, literally none of the thousands and thousands, now tens of thousands, if not 100,000 people I spoke to, none of them have had overnight success. It's all been an extraordinary effort. But the news loves to cover the big successes. They're compelling stories. And we believe, therefore, that the path Mark Zuckerberg took is the path of success. You know, get accepted by a prestigious college like Harvard, drop out within 2 or 3 semesters. Like, that's one key element. That's what all the successful stories do. Come up with a radically innovative concept, or take someone else's concept and make it your own, and go all in and get venture capital. And that's not the common story, yet we think it is. And so I hate is that some people start their businesses and they don't feel that success. They're not billionaires within a year and they're giving up. It's not working. They get frustrated. They study more of these lottery winners and try to replicate them, and they continue to lose. So my little lesson here, at least for myself, has been always stick with your passion. Because if you identify your passion, I actually take it to the level of purpose, like almost like a calling. If you find what your calling is, if you're willing to investigate the time, spend the time to investigate and find out what your calling is, you're automatically a winner. Because it's a fulfilled life. The money and all those components, no one can guarantee what you're going to make, but I know you'll be fulfilled throughout. And from my experience, it's kind of ironic, the people that are living a purpose, that are fulfilled through their business, in almost all cases, are the most financially successful.
So if you're listening in, it's pretty easy to tell that Mike McCallick is strongly motivated by his passion, and that it all depends on the passion that you have as to whether you should pursue something or not. If you do not have a passion for it, it does not matter how much money you are going to make from it. That's the reason you get a lot of entrepreneurs who become entrepreneurs by quitting their jobs and then pursuing something that they actually enjoy.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You know, and the thing is, if we have that purpose, that vision in front of us, it's kind of like gravity. It does pull you. So that's how important it is. The lesson I want to share here is you probably don't know your purpose today as you're listening to this. I sure as heck didn't. And when you don't know your purpose is to find your purpose, explore and discover. I did it through that night with booze. It's not how I'm doing it now, but at least it triggered me to explore something that felt interesting. I don't think you can, do a weekend retreat and find your life's purpose this weekend type thing. I think it develops over time. And as I got more clarity on mine, it still changes. There's still slight tweaks to it. There's new discoveries that give me more knowledge and education about what I'm here to do. So if you don't know what your life's purpose is, I believe your life's purpose is then to discover and seek out your life's purpose.
You've dropped a lot of valuable insight throughout this episode, and you've been on this crazy roller coaster journey. So I want to take the time to ask you, what is the best lesson you have learned throughout that journey?
To prioritize action over information. I found, especially nowadays, I started my first business in 1996, and time is only being more and more compressed because of technology. Competition is moving faster. Things are moving at lightning speed. And I thought back in 96, they were moving at lightning speed. And it will continue to be this way. What I found is what's paid off is action over information. Where it used to be I wanted to have all the information I could to make a smart decision. If I wait now to have all the information, the decision is usually passing by and someone else has grabbed onto it. So I am only looking for partial information that indicates or points me in a direction to take and then taking action. Maybe it's premature action, but I take action because also a lot of the learning is happening in the doing. So whatever you're considering, I argue, play preference into taking action. But, and this is the one little caveat, don't go all in where in some actions where you're risking yourself so extremely that if it doesn't play out, it'll destroy you. I do believe going all in on our purpose, all in our beliefs, but when it comes to the monetary component of taking action, I don't believe making ill-witted decisions that you blow a lot of money on. Try to go with the most minimal kind of option that takes you in the direction of your action and leverage that momentum for learning. As you go down that path, if you're feeling success, that's when you start backing it with money or resources. And if you feel more success, you keep building on that.
So take rapid action and always put your profit first.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, brother.
So there are listeners who they have different goals and aspirations. Some of them want to make a multi-million dollar business. Others are after blog traffic, better relationship, more sales. So what advice do you have for these listeners who are trying to reach their specific breakthrough?
Yeah, so it goes back to the why. That's the why. Why are you looking to do this? And I've spoken at events and people will inevitably say, I want to grow. That's the combination of all those things. I want more money. I want more sales. I want more traffic. Why? Because I want to grow. But I think that's where we stop peeling back the onion. We don't know why we want to grow. Do we want to grow so that we have a big business that everyone knows about and we therefore become a celebrity, an entrepreneurial celebrity? Do you want to grow so you have lots of money so you can do whatever you want and be wherever you want? Do you want to do it just because that competitive spirit and you want to show the world what you can do? I think you got to know why you're doing it. Most entrepreneurs I meet, when I ask them, what are you looking to do? They will say, I want to grow. I'll say, why? They'll say, because I want to be bigger. Why do you want to grow? Because I more money. I want more money. It's all around that, but there's no kind of reason behind more money. Is it the freedom you want? Is it the recognition you want? I think we need to define that, because when we define it, then it can be baked into the business. If you want recognition as an entrepreneur, being an author or on television, think about Marcus Lemonis. Everyone knows that show The Prophet, or many people do. That's a path to that kind of recognition. And you don't need to have a business with 100 employees, which maybe isn't even of interest of yours, having people coming to you with their challenges and problems and running a business. So that celebrityship can be derived other ways. If it's freedom, travel, or something like that, maybe design a business where that's baked into it. So the big breakthrough is constantly ask yourself, why are you trying to do something, to get to the core essence of it, and then bake it into your business. That will give you so much leverage in growing your business the way you want to. I think you'll get the results a million times faster by doing that.
So the key to hitting the breakthrough, know why you are putting in the work. Speaking of breakthroughs, Mike McAuliffe recently wrote a book called The Surge, which is all about riding the next big wave of consumer demand, how to find that area of consumer demand. So since we have Mike here, I'm going to ask him for three tips for how we can spot the next big wave of consumer demand.
So Serge, I'm really excited about this book. I just recently released it. It's on Amazon, of course, and all these things. And it was a result of questions coming in from readers of my other books. So I have, you know, The Pumpkin Plan, Profit First, Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. And one of the readers wrote to me and said, hey, I read all your books and they're wonderful, comma, but, you know, that but's always a scary part. Right? But if I don't time the market appropriately, if I'm offering a product that no one wants, all the strategy in the world is not going to help. The analogy I love to use is the typewriter. You and I, Mark, could go in together and sell typewriters, but we missed the market. That was 30 years ago was the opportunity. So how do you put yourself in the right place at the right time? Here's a couple things. One is you got to look for what's called imminent. I'm sorry, actually, that's the stage two. Let me talk about stage one. First, you got to pick a niche. So most people say to me, Mike, what's the next big thing? And there's actually millions of next big things going on, but it's in all different industries. Everything from squeeze toys to light bulbs to microphones to T-shirts. All these different industries have trends going on. So step one is to pick the niche or the cove, if you want to use a surfing analogy, that you're going to surf in. Stage two then is look for imminent waves. So one example that many of us are aware of is the rise of the electric car. Now, what's fascinating about this is the electric car is now what's called an imminent wave. If you were looking at getting an electric car maybe 5 or 10 years ago, the electric car was called a golf cart, right? Until Tesla came about and became the innovator here. The definition of an imminent wave is that there are early adopters, the cool kids, if you will, that stick with it and you start seeing it present around you. So chances are, Mark, in your neighborhood where you live, that someone has a Tesla. Maybe you see multiple Teslas. Chances are you're seeing them out on the road. That means it's an imminent wave, that the early adopters have acquired the product or service and are continuing to use it. And you know, some new things come about and people use it temporarily and it goes away. So they're continuing to use it. Then we're starting to see a shift in the industry. So we see now Tesla got 400,000 orders. All these other companies are making electric cars. And when you see an imminent wave, this big movement, the question to ask yourself is, what are all the consequences of this movement and all the subsequent ripples or waves that are coming out from it? And those are the ones you want to ride. For example, with an electric car, cooling the cabin temperature is a major energy suck. So there's an opportunity for someone to design maybe new windshields or insulation or ways that the cars can reduce the energy consumption around cabin control. Fueling stations, you know, the massive opportunity potentially there. So you got to ask yourself, what are all the derivative benefits coming out from this shift? And those are all potential waves to ride. The one other thing I want to point out is the difference between an imminent wave and a future wave. So autonomous cars are a future wave. Imminent waves we can see in our neighborhood. Autonomous cars is considered a future wave because it's not rideable yet. It's coming our way. We just don't know how and when or how big it'll be or what direction it'll be moving in. Or maybe it'll peter out along its way. We don't know yet. You know, there's a lot of talk about what Google's doing and investments and so forth. But the question is, do you see one in your neighborhood? No. I mean, do you have a friend that has an autonomous car? Probably no. But when it comes to the Tesla electric car, the answer is yes. So that's how you distinguish the waves. We have to try to ride imminent waves because there's opportunity now there for those. And future waves are actually too far out. We can make a major investment and it may not land right because we don't know how the future waves are coming. And then I think the last phase is the realization that when you hit an imminent new wave, you're going to be one of the few providers. You're seeing something early. You're early to the market. And you're going to have this interesting phenomena that people will be buying from you because they need what you have to offer, even if your product or offering is inferior. So think about it. If you and I were walking through the desert, dying of thirst, and someone was selling water there, we wouldn't be so critical of the water. If it was muddy water, we don't care. Our life depends on this, right? But and then that guy may struggle from this misperception saying, oh, my muddy water clearly is a favorite. Everyone that's dying of thirst is buying from me, clearly, right? And so then he thinks muddy water is the solution until the day someone comes with clean water, sets up a stand next to him, and the muddy water guy's out of business. The last tip I want to share is when you're on an imminent wave, there is more demand than supply. Be very careful of this blindness to the fact that your product may not be that good. Just more people want it than can supply it, so you're getting opportunity. The irony is once you start getting a surge of demand, that is usually an indicator you actually need to improve your offering. It seems counterintuitive, but you need to improve your offering when people want it the most.
That's because other competitors will like see this and think, oh, I got to create something like this.
Yeah, it's just a matter of time. Look at Uber and then how Lyft set in. Now, Uber is constantly innovating. They're constantly trying to improve. So they're on that wave and they're in front. But look how easy it was for Lyft to get involved. Copy the program, copy the setup, let Uber fight with every local government and city and getting rights into it, and Lyft comes in right behind them. It's a much easier path for the next guy. So you have to constantly, if you're the first guy in, you've got to constantly be innovating and improving so that the other guy, when he tries to set in, doesn't come in with a superior product.
That's interesting. I never thought of it that way. I usually think like if you're the first one in, you have such a huge advantage against all the others. I mean, Uber is the bigger name of the two, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But it just shows that the second person has it easier to get in.
Exactly. Far easier. But what Uber's done right, and I think we can learn from them, is the constant innovation. I don't want you to be the muddy water guy who gets a surge of business in the beginning. And then the Lyft comes in and it's far superior and you're out of business.
So this episode is coming to a close. We have two final questions left for our guest. First one, what is one awesome inspirational quote you could think of right now?
It's on my wall, so it's an easy one. Don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive and then go do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. It's all about purpose.
Wow, I've never heard it said in that way before. I've never heard of that one. That's a good one. The second question, now I'm going to give you the spotlight. Where can we find Mike Michalowicz on the web?
Oh, I'm all over it. So I'll give you the shortcuts. My website is the place to go. It's mikemichalowicz.com. Now, a couple things. Let me tell you what's there, and then let me tell you how to get there, because I know that's a tough name to spell. My four books, I'm working on my fifth book now, all are up there, free chapters, so you can start digging in and actually using some of the strategies without even picking up the book. I also blog daily. I podcast. I've been podcasting for a year and a half now, so my Profit First podcast is up there. And I used to write for the Wall Street Journal, so if you want some of the articles I wrote, just go on there and subscribe, and I'll send you my most popular Wall Street Journal articles of all time. But here's the one promise, too, is if you do visit my website, I do promise the most unique website you've ever been to, probably something you've never seen before. So maybe some lessons to be learned there. And then to get there, because I know Mike Michalowicz is an awfully long Polish name, I have a couple shortcuts. One is you can go to Google and type in Mike and then Mick. So M-I-K-E, then Mick is M-I-C. And I will drop down on the list and just pick the longest, most Polish sounding name and you'll find me that way. But the other one is my nickname in high school is Mike Motorbike. So type in MikeMotorbike.com and I'll get you to my website too.
So those are great shortcuts. I didn't think of the Mike Mick, That is really smart because Google will offer those auto suggestions. The Mike motorbike nickname, we'll have to get to that in another episode.
Yeah.
And it was a pleasure to have you. For an additional shortcut, all of this will be in the show notes, including the link to Mike McCallick's website. Mike, it was a pleasure to have you on the show.
It's always a joy talking with you, Mark. I hope to see you out on the road again real soon.
Thanks, Mike. I look forward to doing the same. I thoroughly enjoyed that interview. Mike has been on quite the roller coaster. He got started on that roller coaster by suddenly getting out of his job and pursuing the entrepreneurial path. Mike's ability to then take rapid action and spotting the new waves of demand, that allowed him to rise up to the top. But when he hit rock bottom, he ended up using the same skill set and that allowed him to get back on top. We all face roller coaster journeys filled with ups and downs. If you stay on the course, that roller coaster is going to eventually lead you to a gold mine. In Mike's case, that gold mine was a seven-figure business and best-selling books that make him income while allowing him to do what he loves to do. By taking rapid action, you too will reach your gold mine. But when you face it down, don't stay down. Rise up just as Mike did so you can achieve your breakthrough. If you forgot to take notes, then don't worry. We've got you covered with the show notes. Visit markguberti.com/E13 for those. You can ask your questions over there, which I'll be more than happy to answer. To never miss an episode, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on whatever player you are using. If you are a regular listener and haven't done so already, I would greatly appreciate it if you could give this podcast a review or a rating. Two ways you could do this are through markguberti.com/iTunes or markguberti.com/Stitcher. That ends this episode. Don't forget, dream big, achieve greatness, and unlock your potential today. How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn more and get access to this free resource, visit markguberti.com/retweet. This podcast is a production done by Mark Guberti. For more insights, head on over to markguberti.com.